Hello, and welcome to Heart, Soul, and Data, where we explore the human side of analytics to help amplify the impacts of those out to change the world. With me, Alexandra Mannerings.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Matt. I think we've got a great topic here to dig into one of our favorite things to fix up, which is dirty data. So I'm going to start with having you introduce yourself and how you come to data.
Oh, absolutely. It's such a pleasure to be here. I'm really excited that you asked me to come on, and it's all things data. And when we first met, it was really exciting to meet another person passionate about data, also in the nonprofit space and just like serving this community that I think gets overlooked a lot of times. So let me back up though. Hi, my name is Matt Bratton. I'm the founder of TMB Analytics. And that is actually my side hustle. It's just something that I do as a way to kind of like build a brand out in the social sphere, as far as like what I represent on LinkedIn and TikTok and YouTube, where I make content related to all things data analytics and a very strong focus on Excel, Microsoft Excel. My day job, though, I'm actually the CFO of a SaaS company. And what we do at Aplos, which is the company, is nonprofit accounting software. So this is fund accounting specific to the needs of nonprofits. And what that means is when you've got dollars that come in that are supposed to be earmarked for a very specific purpose, through proper fund accounting, you're able to generate an entire trial balance specific to that fund. And you can see that across the board. And it's super valuable visibility. A lot of times it's required in order to be good stewards of the dollars that you're receiving. And so it's a great company. It's a great place to be. And I've had a lot of fun working there over the last 4.5 years about.
Excellent. So you have lots of different places that you've got great experience with data, which is why it's going to be such a great conversation today.
So fun.
Awesome. Well, one of the things I know that Excel, I feel like, is one of those things that people love it or hate it, right? A lot of people that are super deep in the data space can be rather dismissive of Excel, right? That they say, oh, it's not a database. I mean, I've seen t-shirts that say Excel is not a database. But I think from the nonprofit world, Excel gets overlooked because it's a very, very inexpensive tool, right? Most of us run Windows in some capacity or Office, and so we have access to Excel already. And it has a very low entry point, right? You don't have to know a lot to get started with it. So I do know that people have a lot of experience or have a lot of opportunity to be able to actually put Excel to some good use to get some important things out of data. And so I know we're going to talk specifically about certain aspects of some dirty data, but I'd love to also kind of weave in some basic tools and activities that people could do, you know, with tools that they already have sitting on their computer that maybe they're overlooking. But before we get into that, let's talk a little bit about contact lists, right? That's going to be one of our topics of dirty data. So share with me some of your experience of like, what do you see the challenges around getting good, clean data are, and why is that even important? Why should we worry about that?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. And just to kind of reflect on some of the things you've said, there's irrational, passionate disdain in the data community around Excel. And I like to think of it as just kind of like when you get to the point that we are with technology, you get people who are actually growing up through the education system that are coming out wanting to do analytics, which just wasn't a thing in the past. And I think it's great. But what happens is it becomes such a very focused discipline that it gets detached from the business that it's supposed to serve. That's what I see a lot of. It's, you hear people talk about soft skills and business acumen, and then the purists will talk about like, well, I've got my Python, so I'm okay. And it's just, look, the rest of the business, most of the business world does in some form or fashion run on Excel. Like it or not, I don't care what your t-shirt says, it's out there, it's prevalent. And I hear the complaints that it is error prone and all of these things. It's like, look, just because the tool has a low barrier to entry and the user can get in and do some damage doesn't mean that the tool is necessarily the problem here. It's more about the education and making sure that we know how to use it responsibly and what are its strengths, what are its weaknesses, and where should we draw the line and say, nope, this is no longer an Excel task. It is not a database. We need to put this data over here, right? And so kind of getting back to the topic of like contact lists and dirty data and why should we care? Let's talk about like what dirty data even is. I think just to kind of, it sounds so generic. I would say if you think in terms of, we use the example of a contact list, that is like the lifeblood of a lot of nonprofits, right? You need that contact list. You need those donor lists, those people who are have a vested interest in the success of your nonprofit or your cause to help address an initiative or a cause or a purpose or a why. People believe in that. And then if you want to get their resources, you need to be able to contact them. So what do? You need a contact list. A lot of times these contact lists, they live in some sort of an ERP or a very off-the-shelf system like CRM. But what tends to happen is how that data gets in there could be problematic. And therefore, how it comes out, this is classic garbage in, garbage out, becomes a problem. Because what good is the data in the system if you can't use it or leverage it? Like, what if, these are the most common things that I see, you know, names are jacked up, salutations get in the way, hyphenated names, middle names, first, middle, last, addresses, and keeping those up to date, the way that people present their addresses, phone numbers, people just key in numbers, they may put parentheses, they may put dashes. A lot of it goes back to the source system and the collection process and making sure that if you see a trend or, oh my gosh, my phone numbers are always messed up, how are your phone numbers getting in the system? So that's a question that you need to ask. You need to think about stopping the bleeding likely before you go through some sort of a big cleanup effort, because you, if you're cleaning up while you're going, you will never stop cleaning up. You need to start like kind of tracing things back to the source. So how are we collecting phone numbers? Is it a form on our website that gets ported in? Are we manually doing this? Is it some combination of the things? And setting rules and just being disciplined about executing to those rules to ensure that data that's going in is going to be useful when it's coming out. And maybe phone numbers are a less good example, because a lot of times this goes down to like being able to mail people forms or requests for pledges and things like that. Those addresses are where the mucky muck really becomes a problem, and making sure that things are able to be sent. You're not wasting money on postage that's just going nowhere. You're not sending it to the wrong people. All of those things need to be considered, and it all goes back to data quality. I think that at the end of the day, that's what it's all about.
Yeah. No, and I love that you backed us up to like, what is even dirty data? Because I do think that that's a term that gets thrown around a lot, but we're like, what do we actually mean by that? You know? And I liked in your examples, you know, you talked about inconsistencies. And I think that that's like one of the most common places that dirty data, right? Like that's something that causes problems in data is those inconsistencies. And as humans, we don't care about inconsistencies because we can create analogous connections. We know that a phone number separated by periods is the same as a phone number separated by hyphens.
Exactly.
And so to us, that doesn't seem different. But we have to remember that one of the points of data is to store it in a way that can be read by a machine and processed consistently. And in order to do that, right, we're going to need to make sure that we're being consistent in a way that's consistent to a machine and not just to us as humans. And that can be a hard step to take of like that consistency. And so you mentioned like that sometimes it's human error, right? I'm keying in and I just key it in wrong. I make mistakes. But also then as a human, I might do my phone numbers one way and you do your phone numbers a different way. And if there's no culture around that, if there's no training around that, if there's no regulations around that, that can just continue. And if you're constantly trying to fix that at the end, you're going to be spending an awful lot of time deleting parentheses and replacing periods with hyphens rather than just getting everyone to put phone numbers in the same way at the beginning. So I think that's a great point. But some of the other problems with dirty data may be a little bit harder to identify the source of it, right? Like some inaccuracy. So you talked a lot about accurate addresses, right? And I may be writing down an address exactly as someone gives it to me, but either there's something that's necessary. They forget to give me their apartment number or they just say, they give me the street address and the building number, but not where the mail actually needs to go or whatever it might be, right? There might be things that as a human, I look at the address and it seems fine. How do I work with those sorts of dirty data elements?
Yeah, I kind of have a weird, maybe it's not weird, but I think about a lot of these things very spatially. Like when I think about an address, you think about what are the different components that make up an address? And a lot of times when I'm being forced to clean data, because you know we work with a lot of nonprofits and a lot of times we're changing over from one system to another and you're moving data from an old system where there weren't rules and regulations and we're trying to stand up rules and regulations, you have to deal with the consequences of your previous actions, which is cleaning this stuff up, right? So what you do is you almost solve for there's probably people out there that are going to cringe, but you solve for the worst case scenario where what, how complex could an address get, right? You've got a number, maybe you've got an ordinal coordinate or whatever, north, south, east, west. You've got a name, then you've got, I don't know what to call it, an avenue, a street, or a this or a that. And then you may have a floor or a suite or this. It's really understanding what are we collecting and what are the possible use cases of it. Therefore, we can accommodate to that and ensure that we are going to capture, for the most part, any possible combination of things that could come in. One of the problems I see is a lot of companies, they get so narrow in their focus. It's like, all we allow is like street name, zip code, something like that. And then it just free form for people to put in whatever the heck they want. And it just causes all kinds of mucky muck. What that does is forces them to manage to the exceptions, but you've effectively enforced all of these exceptions because everything doesn't fit into that very fine box. Therefore, anything that doesn't, which is most things, is an exception. So you have to manage to that. What you need to flip it so that you're managing to the norm, or you're managing to what the standard should be. And then in the event of exceptions, you can deal with those one-off. And there's far fewer of them because you've taken into consideration what could be up front. It's putting in that work up front. I love that you talked about like consistency. There's in my past life, and I try to bring it forward every company I've been at, the concept of data consistency and integrity. And to the point of putting together groups of people who it's like, this is our purpose. Like, we are focused on data consistency and integrity and making sure that this is a topic that is one of the least exciting topics to talk about, but it is critical to our ability to execute in whatever it is that we're doing. So really staying focused on how can we be consistent? How do we maintain integrity? And therefore, ultimately, the integrity and consistency of the data and how we capture it.
I think that those twin concepts of consistency and integrity are great, because the consistency has to go into, like I said, like how we collect things. So are we collecting full first names? Are we collecting preferred nicknames? You know, that's a consistency thing, because calling me Alex versus Alexander, both are correct, but it may mean something different in the system, right? In terms of what I'm trying to match to, or what we're trying to use that field for, versus your integrity. No, you talk about that's like the accuracy of the data. Like, is the address actually going to get a piece of mail there? That's the integrity of like it being correct, not just consistent. Because I could be consistently wrong.
Yeah.
Oh, I could collect it exactly the same way every time, but it's still wrong.
Absolutely. And it happens all the time. I love that you brought up too the naming convention. That's another thing that I see is you'll have a at best first, middle, last opportunity for people to key things in. And what do you do when there's a preferred name? Like, my name is Thomas Matthew Bratton, but I go by Matt. So like thinking about those sorts of things and making sure that you have that, like, is there a preferred name? And maybe you defaulted to their first name. I don't know. But making sure that you're collecting all of those possible uses and considering it and implementing it so that it does not become a problem down the road.
And I think that that's an oftentimes missed piece of data integrity, is it's not just about being accurate. It's about being usable for what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
So, right, if I am trying to get somebody government benefits, I need their full legal name, right? If my nonprofit is helping facilitate Medicare or Medicaid or whatever, I need to know that it's Thomas Matthew.
Yeah, absolutely.
But if I'm going to mail you an appeal letter, you're not going to really like it when it says, Dear Thomas Matthew. You're going to be like, yeah, you don't know who I am, right?
Yeah, check it exactly.
Out. And so in that case, I would need that preferred name. And so I think, you know, you bring up a really good point of, and I liked you mentioned this about the addresses, of getting clear of like, what are the discrete elements that I need? What are all of the possible discrete elements that I need? And then which of these are the norm? So I'm going to really make sure that my system's engineered to catch that. Yep. And then which of those might be exceptions, and I can have a place to handle those exceptions. And I think that, you know, it ties into that name thing again. Like, there's a lot of different places where this could be the case that, you know, I see this like with when addresses are designed to capture U.S. addresses.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, as soon as I'm trying to put in a UK address and it's asking me for a state, I'm like, what do I put in there? Right. Like, I guess I could put the county of the UK that this is. Like, I don't know. What do you want me to put in that? And so, again, like, you can, if you're not thinking about what's going to come in and making it appropriate to capture that, you could really get yourself stuck in terms of of maintaining both that consistency and integrity, because you haven't thought about the components you're going to collect and you haven't thought about how you're going to use those components down the road.
Yep. And I think it would be probably prudent to bring up the idea that there is a point of over-engineering, and that gets back to managing to exceptions, right? Mm-hmm. If maybe you've got an entity and one time somebody wanted to, you know, they're like, I'm visiting from out of country, but I want to do this thing. And oh my God, we got to re-engineer the system to capture international people.
Right.
You know, maybe you need to take a step back and think about, like, is this a going concern? Yes or no?
Right.
Making sure that you're not managing to that exception. But if it's part of your business, absolutely make the effort, take the step back, think through how this should look in an ideal situation for what we are trying to accomplish. Then you can move forward.
Yeah.
Good call out there.
No, and that's a great point. That's that like balance of saying, what's the 80-20, right? What's the 80% that I can make sure works perfectly? And we'll just understand that there's going to be a certain component that's not, because in order, we're going to screw up the 80% if we try to make it work for the 20%, which doesn't make sense to do that. I am curious in terms of, so, you know, you talked a lot about like, first is stop the bleed. Right. So we're going to make sure that we're engineering these systems that are capturing data. We're going to think about, what do we actually need to capture? What needs to go in that? Part of it's the tech side, right? Let's make sure we have a field for preferred name. But part of it's also training, right? Making sure that now we're going to educate everybody. Full name goes here. Preferred name goes here. Please don't put parentheses with their preferred name in the full name field, right? There's that education piece. But let's say you've done that. But now, like you said, we've got the historical data that we're stuck with, or data, we purchase a list and now I've got to figure out how to like merge this purchased address list into our nice clean managed list. How do we start dealing with that actual cleanup step?
Yeah, this is a situation where there's going to be a lot of flavors of this. There's people who are experts in this who will go about it one way. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go about it probably a different way. And then this is a spectrum, and I don't know that there's a right, wrong, or otherwise. It should be taken on a case-by-case basis. Like, where are we starting? Like, what is our ideal? Where are we going? Like, what are we trying to achieve? And what did we just get? And what about this thing that we just got is good, bad, or otherwise? I think one of the things that people tend to do is get wildly overwhelmed when they get something and it's like, oh my God, this is 20,000 rows. And look at that. It is all the number and the address and the city and state, or they're all combined, or, you know, this weird CSV file with, you know, it's all just basically a text block. What do I do? We don't stop to really think about like, look, we're going to break this up into chunks, but we need to know where we're headed. A lot of times people just jump in, want to start cleaning and just start like trying to make sense of the thing. It's like, that's fine from an optical standpoint, but don't break anything yet. Figure out where you're headed and then sort of get your bearings, do your research in the thing before you move on. There are different tools. There are different softwares. You could use different like coding languages to probably accomplish some of these things. If you're operating in Excel, which a lot of times I am, because that's where I'm comfortable. That is, what is it? I see numbers from 700 million to over a billion users of Excel. It's there and you can use it. And even if you're over a million rows, like people tend to think is the limit, you could use Power Query and automate some of the cleaning. It really just depends on what are you trying to achieve and what are the inherent issues that you've observed in the data. Is it strictly formatting? Is it just the way that it is handed to you? Then that's probably an easy fix. Is it actually like messed up data? Like there's all sorts of special characters or something didn't come out of the source system very well. Those are going to take a different type of approach. So it's really about, it's not dividing and conquering. It's getting very explicit on what needs to be done and where are we starting so that we can kind of bridge the gap and figure out how to attack this beast. Because a lot of times it is a big project. There's a lot of potential moving pieces, and you want to make sure you're moving the right ones.
That's a great point in terms of there may be lots of things that you could get involved in. You know, you just get this new mailing list or you just get these new contacts and we have to figure out what to do with them. And you may see that there's like this free notes field that's got all sorts of stuff in it. And you're like, how am I going to make any sense of that? But if you stopped and were like, what am I actually going to use this for? You'd find out that you don't even need that field.
Yeah.
So why worry about what's in it? Or why worry that some of the characters are getting dropped out? Like, I don't need that field because here's what I'm actually trying to do with it. So I can set that aside and not worry about it. That resonates so much with me because I do come back to that with nearly every data problem is like, hang on, where are we trying to go? Like, let's get real clear with that first before we do anything else, because it's going to be what we measure our choices against. And then, you know, that you then said, okay, so if here's where we're trying to go, where are we starting from? What's the actual situation here? How far are we from where we're trying to go? And then that highlights for you, like, okay, well, if what I was trying to do was use this list to mail people, you know, a certain, let's say like appeal letter, or I'm trying to invite them to a program, I can identify, okay, what's necessary to do that thing, and can my data do it now? Or are there changes that need to be made to the data in order to get it there?
Exactly. Yeah. No, and I think that's a really good way to think about it as well, on a use case basis, or like, what is the objective? It kind of keeps coming back to that. While you're talking, I'm thinking there's a couple of quotes about elephants. The first one is like, how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time? Like, that's always something that's good to keep in mind when you're dealing with these large, big, hairy projects. There's another one that I haven't heard a lot of other people say, but it's one that I heard and I really liked, which is like, how do you sculpt an elephant using marble or whatever it is? And the answer is like, get a piece of marble and remove everything that doesn't look like an elephant. and you could use any example there, but it's like, okay, you start with this big just slab of data, but like, what are you trying to get? And a lot of times it's not even the cleaning, it's the removing of excess. And like, oh my God, there's like 700 columns and this and that, and I don't know what to do. It's like, right, but you only need 4. So let's get started there. Let's isolate the 4 that you need, and then let's reevaluate. And it's taking that step-by-step process, like slowly eating the elephant, chipping away the things that don't need to be there, and then eventually it will reveal itself.
That's a great point. It is so easy. And I fall into this trap a lot because I'm always like, oh, the data. I want all the data. Remember that actually getting rid of data can make your life so much easier, can make things so much simpler to handle. And so by focusing on just the parts you need, and like you said, getting rid of the stuff that you don't, like, let it go, put it somewhere else. And so I think that's a great analogy. I loved the just take everything away that's not the elephant is perfect. One of the other things I thought that was interesting that you brought up as well was like the idea of what kind of challenge are we trying to solve? Are they formatting problems? Are there actual just inaccuracies in there? Because one of the things that I realized as you were talking is that like some of those things are very easy to solve in a tool like Excel, right? Formatting, there's a lot of great formulas that can help you change periods into dashes for phone numbers or whatever it might be. But there could be things like inaccuracies where you're going along and it requires a human review.
Yeah.
Right. To be able to interpret what's in there, to be like, oh, I have to fix that because they've done blank wrong. You know, and you may be able to identify patterns in there. Sometimes there are patterns where then you could figure out a formula that would help you. But sometimes it just requires somebody who actually knows what's going on to like go through it and say, oh, they were signed up for the wrong program or whatever, you know, and you have to fix it with human review. And I think breaking that down into understanding, like, what are things that I can use computers to fix? What are patterns that are consistent that I could define this versus what is like an inaccuracy that's going to require human intervention? Because I think sometimes we use humans to do the computer stuff, which we're terrible at. And then we try to get computers to do the human stuff, which they're terrible at. And so identifying those sort of those two broad categories of fixing that has to happen is important from the beginning so that you head down the right path and using the right tools.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I very much agree. I think there's different types of people who, when they encounter kind of dirty data in the wild, they react in one of those ways, which is like, oh my God, there's got to be a formula to fix all of this. Sometimes there isn't. I hate to break it to you.
Yeah.
ChatGPT may or may not be able to help you out of this one, right? It does need a human review. But through that process, like, maybe you only need to invest 10 minutes to looking at the things and going like, oh, there is a pattern. Good point. Now that I understand the pattern, I can isolate these things and we can carve off that chunk. And now we're cooking with fire. So I think that being hesitant to get your hands dirty or accepting of the idea that yes, you may actually have to do some work to review this stuff. That's where a lot of people get hung up. Mm-hmm. I like to take it from the approach of like, let's get our hands dirty, make sure that we know what we're messing with, and then keep doing the 80-20 thing. It's like, okay, I think 80% of these things we can handle like this. Boom, done. Feel good. Now this 20%, what's the lift involved to fix the 20%? Are they purely manual? Mm-hmm. If so, is it worth it? Like, what are we trying to achieve? what is the problem we're trying to solve, and then deciding how to move forward. Sometimes that last 20% just requires a little bit of additional effort, and then that creates a situation where you can become efficient again and then lob off another 80%. And you just get it down to the point where now you're dealing with just a few exceptions, and those just need to be handled on a case-by-case basis. And accepting that this is part of the process is where a lot of people get tripped up, because they think that, man, I shouldn't have to be doing this much work. It's like, well, maybe you're right, but you got to put in a little bit of effort to determine that. And have you, if you've done that, then great. If you haven't, then get to work.
Right. No, I know. I'm curious if you've got a few favorite Excel formulas that you find are the most frequently used around like cleaning contact lists.
Oh boy. Yeah. So there's a few that are newer that I think have been kind of rolled out in more recent history that have created some pretty cool things, where I think some of the classics. So number one, I got to give it up for the trim function, right? There's the number of times that you may encounter indexes that don't match or other things like that, where they look identical. As far as you can tell, all the text is the same, but they just aren't picking up as a match because there's like a hanging space at the beginning, middle, or end that you can't see it because it doesn't stand out. Using the trim function will help take care of a lot of those and promote consistency. So that's certainly one. Historically, I would have said, you know, left, mid, and right functions to like grab left number of this character. So like if you're dealing with zip codes and you want to be able to break off that four bunch in the back instead of the first five or something, it's presented in a certain way, you could do a right five, grab the text and you're getting that last bucket. And then you could do a mid by counting and find. So find itself is another good one. So find, left, right, mid. Now we've got like text before, text after, text join. There's a lot of these new functions that are just a little bit easier to not only understand what they're doing, like they've really worked on the syntax part, on like kudos, I guess, to the Excel developers, people who are like trying to make it a better, more user-friendly tool. Mm-hmm. So you've got like text before. That's exactly what it says. It's like, you're going to grab text before a certain thing. So tell me what the thing is you want to find. Is it a space? Is it a hyphen? Is it a parenthesis? Whatever it is, text before, text after does the exact same thing, just after. Text join is if maybe you do already have a string and you want to create like an address block, you can create a common delimiter along a text string and just say, I want to join this, this, and this, and I want to separate it by a comma or like a special character to create a space down or something like that. There's those sorts of things I think are you can go a long way with just a few of those functions, assuming we're not like dabbling in Power Query, which could take all of this to a completely different level for sure. Right. But just quick and dirty work, you can go a long way with a lot of those.
Yeah. And I think that this is why, and it's interesting because I've had a few people ask me like, okay, if I want to do data in nonprofits, like what do I need to learn? What tools should I learn if I'm brand new to this space? And I think, you know, you bring up such a great point that there is a lot you can do. Just learning like a couple of important functions in Excel will get you to a place where you can make a lot of use of the data that you've already got. And so I think if you're looking at just sort of taking that next little step, learning how to write a few basic functions in Excel, I do think is a really great, great first step. And when the time comes, you can learn Power Query, you can learn SQL, you can learn some of these other codes out there that let you do much more complicated things. But there's nothing wrong with getting started with those smaller steps that still might yield some really great results for you.
Yeah, I agree with that bigly. I think that there's this, I kind of started off by talking about there's a lot of like irrational, just like hatred towards Excel that just, it doesn't make sense, but it's there. And it's kind of funny, I guess, if you think about it. But like, I've seen comments recently like, oh, it's just the kiddie pool of analytics. It's like, no, I think of it more as like a gateway drug. Maybe that I shouldn't think about it like that, but it's like a gateway tool for people to get exposure in a low risk open playground to like start playing around. And believe it or not, like it or not, you can go real far with solid Excel skills. No joke, because the closer you get to the operations of the business, the more likely it is that they're working in a lot of like ad hoc type requests where they're dealing with quick analytical asks, like, hey, what would happen if we did this? And I need a model for that. It's like, I'm sorry, but you're probably not going to, you know, go into Python and build this thing. You're going to bust it out in Excel in 12 minutes, right? Mm-hmm. That's just the way it's going to work. And then you can hand it back to the user. So it has so much applicability, but it also teaches basic logic and ordering and different syntax that if you understand the things that you're trying to do, once you get into the other types of coding languages, you're like, oh, that's just like doing this, or it's just like, oh, it's like doing a pivot table. And if I want to do this, then I have to do that, or working in the data model. So it feels like table stakes to me as a starting point, and it should not be looked down upon. I think that it's a very versatile tool.
I think it's like people being disparaging about using bicycles because they're like, well, how are you going to get from New York to California?
Yeah.
Like, well, if that's what you're trying to do with a bike, yeah, that's going to be hard for you. But if I'm just trying to get to the grocery store every day, a bike's a great option. I don't need a driver's license. I don't have to insure it. Like, it's a great entry point to get me moving.
Yep. No, and I see this, like, I've been involved in martial arts for most of my life, and you've got like people in mixed martial arts, or people, you've got like, oh, this top boxer, what would happen if they fought like this top MMA person or something like that? And like, yeah, but what would happen if you tied one arm behind their back and you gave them this? It's like, come on, now you're just making stuff up. You're just coming up with an arbitrary scenario to fit whatever thing it is that you're trying to do to make yourself feel better. It's like, look, this isn't us versus them. This is a, what are we trying to achieve? And what's the best way to get there? And this is one way to get there. Let's just be okay with that.
Yeah. And it's like an example of like, don't use it to manage where your flight teams are if you're running like a multi-international airline, right? Like, yeah, again, that's not an appropriate use of Excel. And it does come crashing down.
Excel is not a database. Like, we've already established that, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, exactly.
I love that. Well, so to wrap up, I'm wondering, do you have a good resource if somebody's listening and they're like, you know what, I am inspired. I'm going to learn a few Excel formulas and like take my first couple of steps. Like, do you got a good place to send them so that they can get started with cleaning that dirty contact list and using Excel in potentially a slightly new way?
Oh, my goodness. So one place that I might ask you to check out would be one of my profiles. So I'm on YouTube, I'm on TikTok, I'm on LinkedIn. And I do cover a lot of Excel content. So it's just at Matt Bratton on all of those platforms. It's something that I'm passionate about. And I have started to really get down and dirty on Excel. I've got in a newsletter that I've got two, actually, one that's specific to analytics careers called the Daily Analyst. And I've got one that's specific to Microsoft Excel called the Excel Daily. Maybe I need to merge those at some point because it's very similar type of topic where it's like, I want to make analytics accessible and highlight just how prevalent it is within the workforce and how valuable just, I'll call it critical thinking skills are, just another way of saying analytics. And then Excel being the most accessible tool, being able to wield that in a responsible way and use it sort of to start exploration and getting into this area of work. So check out those things, get on the newsletter. I'm always sharing tips and other things. I also on YouTube have a 4-part Excel for Analytics project series that starts, I would say, if anything, watch video number one, because it gets into some very basic tips, tricks, and other things for leveling up your Excel. And if you stop there, then you probably already got all of the things that you just said is like some very basics. And then the second video gets into like data cleaning and other things. So all good resources. And then, by the way, there's just tons of awesome content out there in general. No shortage of it. You don't have to just limit yourself to me.
I love it. Well, we'll link to all of those things in the show notes so everyone can find those. And hopefully, like I said, sort of take their first or next step in Excel to help those contact lists and all those other things that we're using. Like you said, the ad hoc questions, that quick, like, hey, I just need a summary of something or a count of something or an average of something that are things we can do just with a real quick, you know, entry into Excel. So I think that's a great thing for people to be comfortable doing, regardless of what your role is in an organization.
Absolutely. Yep. That'd be great.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me. It's been a joy.
You have been listening to Heart, Soul, and Data. This podcast is brought to you by Miraculous, an analytics education, consulting, and data services company devoted to helping nonprofits and social enterprises amplify their impacts and thrive through data. You can learn more at Miraculous.com, M-E-R-A-K-I-N-O-S.com.